Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 3rd. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Dude, where'd the season go?
Yeah, who took it?
It's gone already.
I mean, I was looking under the bed this morning until I realized there's no place to put it under there.
Man, oh man. Did that go fast or what? Is it just me?
I think it's just you. I think one of us is getting older.
One of us. All right. Well, I was just talking about how people should, you know, wait a couple months, see what their team is like, and then all of a sudden the season's over.
Yeah, pretty much that happens when you take it slow as it goes by before you know it.
Yeah, all right. Well, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Anthony Bass of the Pacific League winning Nippon Ham Fighters, and we're going to talk about Nippon Ham, the PL and CL playoff matchups, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, now, right-hander Anthony Bass has been kind of a ballast for the Fighters, you know, which, you know, could be a bad way to describe him. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is that they've shifted him from the rotation to the bullpen to the rotation in order to keep the staff balanced.
Right.
So after throwing an inning of relief in Tuesday's 3-0 loss to the Cebu Lions, the 28-year-old Bass had an 8-8 record in 37 games and a 3.65 ERA in 103 2/3 innings.
Mm.
And I spoke to him before that game, so let's hear what he has to say. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is starter reliever Anthony Bass of the Nippon Ham Fighters. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, it's been kind of an interesting year you've had here. Obviously, you were in the starting rotation, and then all of a sudden you're a reliever. And how did that transition go? Was that something you were prepared for?
Something I've done before in the past. Whatever they need, I've always been able to kind of do.
Okay.
It's kind of always kind of been my strength is,
okay,
you know, be able to be used in multiple roles, starting and relieving. So, you know, they tried me out as starting, and then I think there's an injury or something like that in the bullpen, or
mm-hmm.
Needed some help there. So they threw me on the bullpen, and then they needed help back in the rotation. So I kept bouncing back and forth.
What kind of adjustments do you make to your routine? Let's talk about to your pitching, because obviously it's different coming in for two innings as opposed to six.
Yeah, definitely have to kind of pace myself when I'm, you know, expected to go out there, going through a lineup at least three times, you know, not letting it all go the first inning or two, kind of saving my bullets, if you want to say that, but also, you know, not sacrificing being aggressive against these hitters, because when you start falling behind, you start getting in their favor, and then that's when they start doing damage, so still maintaining an aggressive mentality, you know, both starting and relieving.
Okay. So, obviously, then the difference is when you're ahead in the count as a starter, are you looking for, no wasted effort? I think if you're a reliever, you might be thinking, I can waste this one, you know, I can put this a little outside.
Yeah, you know, you definitely want quick outs. Those are always nice as a starter. It helps you get deep in a ball game. So I try to use my defense early and often and try to get as deep as I can.
Got a heck of a defense here.
Yeah, definitely. It's been fun watching these guys work hard and make the plays that they've made for us all season. You know, there's a reason why that we're in a pennant race right now. It's because everyone's kind of doing their job.
Obviously, this team had an ERA above the league average a year ago, and they brought in you and Chris and a couple of the rookies, Kato and Takanashi, you know, just made huge contributions. So you guys are like a mile ahead of where you were a year ago.
You know, I think it's been a lot of fun this year. Everyone's kind of getting along and everyone's kind of pushing each other to, you know, get the best out of everyone. Even in the bullpen right now, you know, you go out there, you put up a zero, you hand the ball to the next guy. Everyone seems to be doing their job, and it's just a testament of what this rotation's done all year. And guys go up there, they give everything they got, whether, you know, they have it that day or not. They're going to give you what they have, and obviously we've been pretty successful.
Now, obviously, I want to speak to the bullpen, because everybody was happy with your bullpen coming into the season. I think there was a lot of confidence, but Masui was gone, and then
Chris Martin was gone and Yoshikawa. It seems like you guys are saying, okay, who's next? We're good.
Yeah, it's kind of like a closer by committee role right now. So everyone's kind of has to be ready. You know, we had a huge loss early in the season with Masui, and then obviously with Chris's injury recently, those are two big losses out of the bullpen. So I feel like a lot of the young guys too have stepped up, such as like Aguchi. He's really done a great job. He's kind of unnoticed, I think. He's a really valuable asset down in the bullpen for us. And everyone's, like I said, been doing their job, pushing each other, and we're just kind of riding the high wave right now.
Yeah, obviously those guys come in the sixth inning. Nobody even knows their names sometimes. But I saw you got a great work last night from Yuya Ishii, and also when Miyanishi saved that was about an inch from being a tie game.
Yeah, that was a close one. But you know what? He's been great all season for us, and he was the right man in the right spot, and he did a great job.
Indeed, and his glove in the right spot. Yeah. And talk about the defense we've been playing the last couple of days. The great play in right field, the two plays that Yo made in Fukuoka.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, especially that game against the Hawks. You know, those were like must-win games for us. So for him to bust his butt and track that ball down in center field and kind of make a, people call it a Willie Mays catch. You know, it was pretty incredible. And not only Yo, but all the outfielders have been doing a great job. All over the field, not just Yo, but it's been a lot of fun to watch.
It has been. It's kind of been kind of an interesting season. And I have to ask, what were the people in the bullpen saying? Masui can start. What was he doing in the bullpen?
Talk about a blessing from above right there. I mean, he's been tremendous out of the rotation for us. Coming in, we weren't expecting, what he's put up, I'll be honest with you. And I'm sure he didn't either. But he's gone out there and gone deep into ball games, saved our bullpen plenty of times.
Yeah, he's helping out the bullpen, he was helping him out before, and now he's helping him out by giving you guys rest.
He really is. He's one of the reasons why, we have a chance to, win the pennant here tonight, possibly.
Okay, well, anyway, thanks much. Hopefully we'll see you after the game and after the pennant.
Yep, definitely.
Congratulations, and good luck as the rest of the season unfolds here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. You're a historic figure on this show because you're now the first Fighters player or scout we've interviewed in the past 3 years whom we didn't ask about Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, dude.
I know. I left that out of the notes.
This is what happens whenever I don't send you questions.
I saw the note that said in bold letters and 15 points, don't forget to ask about
it. Just so you guys remember, I send Jim questions and he either misremembers them or doesn't remember to ask them. So I stopped sending him questions years ago.
And that's what happens. I missed the obvious one. But I figured, we could give it a rest for 1 minute.
1 minute. Great.
Mind you, my net current blog post is War and Peace about Ohtani.
Great. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, that'll get readers to flock to it.
Yeah, there you go.
So, what would you have to say about Mr. Bass?
Yeah, it was a quick chat, and I know the first thing that stood out for me was I know it was a couple of good catches by Yang or Yo or whatever you want to call him, Yo Daikon, in the showdown games in Fukuoka. But obviously not Anthony Bass himself, but he said people were calling it a Willie Mays catch, and I'm like, Willie Mays is turning over in his rocking chair if he's listening to our podcast. I mean,
#. Hi.
No, it was not like a Willie Mays catch. It was similar.
Sure.
It was similar in route
was.
Because he had to go back on a ball. But heck no.
I know what you're saying. But yeah, it was the kind of catch that he made a lot of. I wouldn't. Of course, the famous one was not his best, and he wouldn't say it was the best. But it wasn't because, of course, the element of that catch was the throw.
Of the catch was the fact that he never really looked back. You know, he ran to a spot. I mean, Yo is looking at that ball all the way. And I would contend that most center fielders in the Pacific League and probably half the center fielders in the Central League would have also made the catch. Because they all have the speed to do it. It was just about getting back on the ball.
Well, the trick where everybody had it was that the ball knuckled on him because he was looking at it over his left shoulder, and running to a spot, and the ball changed on him, and he had to turn around and retract it over his right shoulder. So that was the hard part, and that would have thrown the aforementioned players who would not have made it.
All right, so now you're saying the ball knuckled on him. I say he misread it. So obviously the Willie Mays catch. Anyway,
well, misread it is sort of like when you misread it, you expect that you get a different look. But when you're running back and you're watching the ball over your left shoulder, okay, maybe he could have misread it, but I mean he had it and then had to turn around and reacquire it. So it wasn't that easy.
Yeah, it was spectacular.
And it was hard because he didn't have any time to lose, obviously, because he was playing shallow to prevent the winning run from scoring from second on a single.
Right. Well, I just want to flatten the tires on that exaggeration bus because I didn't think it was a Willie Mays catch.
But you don't have to be as mean.
Okay, all right. And so the thing I picked up in the conversation about Anthony is, and I had spoken with him before a couple times and mentioned that we like to have him on the show. So he's the guy who reminds me of the scrappy utility player. Only he's okay. A pitcher.
He's the scrappy utility pitcher.
Exactly, exactly. And
he's the Walt Weiss of the Fighters pitching staff. Except he's not retired yet.
Right. Here's the thing. We hear a lot of guys who come over and maybe don't have success or don't do well or don't play on a winning team and they get frustrated. But here's a guy who has found some level of success on a pennant-winning team. And you can just hear in this short chat the respect that he has gotten playing in NPB and looking at Japanese baseball as a whole. And
oh, I see, the respect that he feels for the environment.
For Japanese baseball itself.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
And I thought that kind of came through in the tone as he's speaking. And it's obviously he's learned something about the game this year and learned about himself in general. And I'm not saying he thinks this is major league quality baseball in Japan. I don't think people are ready to go down that road. But he has clear and present respect, let's put it that way, for this brand of baseball that they play in Japan. It seems like he's learned a little bit.
Well, I think almost everybody does, except the people who fail and are in denial.
Well, I think a lot of people say they do. They talk a good game and they say, I was told before I came over what to expect and that these guys can pitch and that they're very good fundamentally and they're not out of position and blah, blah, blah. But until you experience it, you don't have that level of respect that you might otherwise have if you come and play and fail or experience it. Even with the success, I think you gain respect for these guys.
I think you do. And I think it comes out in different ways. And there's it also depends on the nature of the guy's major league experience, I think, to some degree. You get guys, a number of people who succeed in the majors or play a long time in the majors, and there's just some things they can't wrap their heads around.
Right.
And it skews things a bit, and it's the culture or something, there's lots of things that go into it. I don't know.
Right.
That's a longer story than I have any useful answers for.
Okay. And then the other thing that stood out for me, I guess, was the fact that, he made a comment about Hirotoshi Zenshin Matsui, the closer turned starter,
right,
and them not expecting it, and then Matsui himself not expecting the kind of success that he had. And so that makes me wonder what was everyone expecting? What did they tell him when they sent him to I think he stretched out on the farm a little bit. I know he went to the farm. He did,
but that wasn't the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose, according to Masao Kida, who's the assistant GM, and Toshimasa Shimada, who's the chief executive of the Fighters, was basically just to get his game, his head and arm back on track.
Mm-hmm.
They had not been thinking about using him as a starter, although that Masato Yoshi, the pitching coach, says that had been an option.
Right.
But he never thought it. He thought it would work out well. Everybody said, we think he has the stuff to start. But nobody thought it was, of course, nobody thought he was going to be the second half starter for the Fighters, which he in essence became.
Right. I watched Masato Yoshi and Hideki Kuriyama, the manager, and I'm just wondering what they expected from him and what was the plan and what the plan was looking forward, and are they going to keep him there? What's the plan in the postseason? All these things came into mind when I heard that statement from Anthony, because that's not what we hear from guys. We don't hear them say, well, you know, we were hoping for this or we were hoping for that. We got more. But when you hear a guy saying, who knows how much Anthony gets translated, you know, from the translators, because obviously I'm not sure he's going up to Masui and asking him, hey, you expect to be pitching into the eighth inning or seventh inning and all your starts? Should I get ready? You know, should I get ready every time you go out?
That's the interesting question there, I suppose.
But I'm wondering how he knows that Masui didn't expect to do as well as he did. That's all.
Well, I think there was a sense, there may have been a general sense of wonder. One of the things I thought was interesting that, you know, I can start and relieve. You know, he was proud of that. But I think here's a key to the Fighters' 2016 season. Okay. So Anthony Bass was 6-7 with a 4.76 ERA and a 1.56 whip, allowing 7 home runs and 75 and two-thirds inning pitched as a starter this season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the bullpen, he threw 23 games, 28 innings, 6 holds, no home runs, and a 1.11 whip.
So it sounds like he was much more effective as a reliever.
Okay, and then Masui, relieved in 21 games, was 3-2 with 10 saves and 1 hold, 1.85 whip. As a starter, he threw 8 games, went 6-1, threw a shutout, 57 and a third innings, 1.10 ERA, 1.03 whip. So I almost, one of the things you could trace the success of the Fighters to was the day when they said, let's keep Masui in the rotation and let's keep Anthony Bass in the bullpen.
Right, right. Yeah, the numbers tell you to do that.
So I would think, you know, when he said, he described himself as a guy who could start and relieve, I think it's fair to say he was an effective reliever who could also start.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I said scrappy pitcher.
Scrappy pitcher. Well, he was more than scrappy in the bullpen. But anyway, yeah. So that was a huge thing. And the guy he mentioned, in addition to the other pitchers, was a 22-year-old rookie, Kazutomo Iguchi.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't pitch a lot, but he did. He was kind of the fifth inning guy a lot for the Fighters. So I think Anthony got to know him pretty well, you know, meeting him between the mound and the bullpen.
Right. Okay. All right. So let's talk about the Fighters, the Shohei Ohtani and the Fighters ham it up. They finished the Pacific League pennant race in style. The two-way superstar puts on a one-man show, and this was on.
Yeah,
this was on.
Was he wearing Brandon Laird's uniform when that home run went out?
Oh right, yeah. So you give the credit to the guy who had. What did Brandon say about that home run? He said he got lucky.
Okay.
He said he ran into a pitch. Basically, I only heard the Japanese version, but that's what it sounded like. He ran into a pitch, but they beat the Lions 1-0 on Wednesday at Cebu Dome. First pennant in 4 years, 7th in franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I say it every year. You have to try and pick some upsets because they do happen. And I didn't predict the Pacific League that well. And I think we were all in the same bus or on the same bus with the Hawks, and we all had them winning. And I think our collectively our kind of jaws just dropped on the ground, and the Fighters stood tall at the end, and it's just kind of surprising. I didn't expect it. I still thought, you know, late into the season, I thought, well, the Hawks can overcome this. It's just a hiccup, and it just shows you how difficult it is to stay on top.
Difficult to stay on top. Well, the Fighters didn't have any trouble staying on top in September, which was, I guess, the part of your prediction that failed. But I don't know. It was a close race. You know, close races happen. But I did think, as I said, at the end of August that, you know, just in terms of what they did on the field, you know, what, how the players were producing, the Fighters had accomplished more so than the Hawks. So their being in first place didn't look like a mirage. It wasn't like it was smoke and mirrors.
Definitely, yeah.
So,
well, I mean, they won 83 games, and we didn't mention it on the show last week, but they on the, we taped on Saturday, and on that day they beat Rakuten 4-1. And that gave them their franchise single season best 83rd win, and they clinched the pennant with their 86th victory. And all things considered, it takes that kind of effort and that kind of win total to knock off a team like the Hawks. You've got to come up with your best against a team that's sitting at the top. And Ohtani Fan 15, so that was one shy of his career best, gave up one hit and a walk. And that was a kind of a performance that says, "Hey, MLB, look at me," you know.
Yeah, hey, I can pitch too.
And apparently, I didn't look up the numbers, but he hadn't pitched well against Cebu in his career all that well. So for him to shut that team out was also like a step up. It was just kind of amazing. You know, he's a high impact player. We've been talking about him all season. I think it's been basically Japan Ohtani Weekly, but instead of Japan Baseball Weekly.
Indeed. That's my apologies for not asking about Ohtani. So I'll be chastised.
Well, I'll just bombard you with questions before you go out to do interviews.
Everybody, we'll ask everybody. What do you think, Betcha? I mean, I do ask. I mean, when I'm at the park, I pretty much ask every major league scout their opinion.
Right. And they're willing to give you some of it, some of their opinions, but not all.
Well,
I'm sure
they're willing to give me something, whether it's their opinion or not, I do not know.
Wow,
but they're willing to tell me something.
You look at the stats, and the games are not over in the Pacific League. They have a little bit more to go, but a lot of the stats say that the Hawks could just as easily be the pennant winning team as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, they didn't. They had a good, solid finish there, but it was a little too late. I mean, the problem was those two games they lost to the Fighters in Fukuoka. So
certainly, yeah, that showdown game.
Well, I guess in the three games they were swept in August, that kind
of
hurt.
Yeah, of course, and you know that was in the midst of that winning streak.
Right, and here's the thing: is that the Fighters went 15-9 against the Hawks this season.
Right, and you know
that kind of hurts. I mean, that was really the difference in the pennant race.
Well,
obviously, because the teams were not far apart.
When you bring that up, I have some comments from some of the competing managers, and one of them was one of the comments was from Kimiyasu Kudo, the SoftBank's manager. He said, "I think the difference in the standings stems from the fact that we weren't able to do well head to head against them."
That's absolutely true, I think.
And then Tsutomu Ito of the Lotte Marines said they had a steady balance of hitting and pitching. Ohtani stopped pitching and was in the lineup more, and Masui went into the rotation, and those two guys really got them going. And then from outgoing Cebu's skipper Norio Tanabe Nabe 2, he's only Nabe 2 now because he only lasted 2 years. But he says Ohtani was a terror for opposing teams. And then Rakuten skipper Masataka Nashida, he said Ohtani was the key man. It was like being in a comic book world.
That sounds like Nashida.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, the Tanabe comment, which I thought was interesting, was he said it wasn't their pitching, it was their hitting. Which I find interesting and almost like, has this guy been paying attention to the season?
No, he hasn't.
No.
Maybe
okay.
He's just thinking, hey, look, we scored. They didn't shut us out, so they beat us by scoring runs. But everybody beat Cebu by scoring runs because they didn't shut many people out because they didn't catch the ball.
Yeah, they couldn't come from behind against everybody.
Yeah. So getting back to the victory. Now, another thing about Masui was he became the first to have 10 wins and 10 saves in the same season.
Since
Masahide Kobayashi, who did it in 2000.
Oh, okay.
And, I thought that was really interesting for just his whole turnaround thing. So I will get to it later. I wonder what the plan is for him in the postseason. But you look at what's going on.
Why would you wonder?
Yeah,
we've got a guy who was terrible in the bullpen, and he's been lighting it up as a starter. Should we put him back in the bullpen?
Well, that's not what I mean. We'll get to it. Oh. We'll get to it.
Okay. So you have more to it than just that.
Right. So, you know, my impression about the fighters is that there's nothing that they do better than anyone in particular, but they do everything well. And that was my impression. And then I looked and, you know, they have the best bullpen. They had 120 holds this season, and that was by far the most in Japan. No other team had 100. The Carp had 98. And then their batting average on balls in play against was 286, and that was second in Japan behind the Hawks, and theirs was 283. And you had...
You mean their opponents?
Opponents, yes. Batting average against.
Right. Yeah, the Hawks certainly have the best fielding, I think, the best fielding team in Japan.
Right, and then another aspect, that they had five guys, Daikon... Yo, and then Sho Nakata, Brandon Laird, Haruki Nishikawa, and Takuya Nakashima. All five of those guys were in the top 10 in the league in strikeouts. Yet they still scored a bunch of runs, they stole a bunch of bases, and they hit for average. So, I mean, they just did everything else so well, or everything all around. All their players could get on base. They really get on base like crazy. They can steal bases. They don't just bunt and get guys in the scoring position, but they bunt and then they get them home somehow. So it's just they just had an amazing season.
Well, there are a couple of things to say about that. One is that playing in Sapporo Dome makes the bunt a more effective tactic than it is in pretty much every other Pacific League park. Of course, that doesn't stop Kuriyama from bunting. You know, he'd bunt at Jingu Stadium if they gave him two outs in an inning.
He'd bunt with one out.
He would. He would. I'm not kidding. I mean, two strikes, no problem. 3-0 count, no problem.
Wow, we can hear the birds singing here on a lovely Sunday morning. Get out of here, bird. We're taping.
What's up with that? Okay. I don't know. You mentioned Jingu Stadium, and you hear birds. So,
beautiful.
Okay. Well, anyway, the thing about the fighters, which is, you know, to say all that, what they do well, and obviously what you know, Nakata had an off season, although he was, he drove in a lot of runs, but he didn't have a particularly good season. I know he's not very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
But what they really did well this year, compared to last year, was pitch and catch the ball. They didn't catch the ball really well in 2015, but they did. They moved up right behind the Hawks in a number of areas. In some ways, they were better than the Hawks in two areas.
Uh-huh.
One was controlling the running game,
right?
Which they were very good. And the other thing they did very well, which goes hand in hand with that, is although they allowed many fewer base runners than they did in 2015, the fighters turned many, many more double plays while striking out many, many more batters, in which, you know, which are hard to turn double plays.
Many, many, many.
So, yeah, have billions and billions. So that was a huge difference for the fighters. I mean, that was the key. The offense had some issues because of Nakata, but Shohei Ohtani and Nishikawa to some degree helped sort of pick up for that,
right.
Pick up the slack from him, which allowed them to catch the Hawks in the pennant race. With the Hawks, of course, took huge hits. I mean, Yuki Inagita did not start the season well, other than drawing a zillion walks. But he didn't hit for home runs, which wasn't a huge surprise. But he was hurt at the beginning of the season, and he was hurt at the end of the season.
Right.
Their bullpen had some injuries in the middle. Edison Barrios was not
injuries
effective.
And issues. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They lost Rick Vandenhurk for about 3 months. So there were things going on, and but not having the huge thing was that offense of losing Lee DeHoe, because they really did not have a huge bat in the DH spot.
Okay, yeah, so. I can see that. And then, again, getting back to where you're talking about them turning double plays, and I just think their ability to get off the field when they're playing in the field, partly because of that bullpen, Naoki, Miyanishi, Yohei, Kaguya, and Keisuke Tanimoto, those guys were really just invaluable in the bullpen, and other guys too. I just wanted to name those three, but
sure.
Everybody they seemed to bring on did a good enough job for them to get through, including Bass and Chris Martin, who has been injured but was really effective as a closer.
Yeah, and I think the part about that is they had so much strength in the bullpen, and actually this was part of the plan, was to shift Kato and Takanashi to Takayuki Kato, the rookie, and Takanashi's also a rookie, Hiratoshi Takanashi, you know, he's in his third year, but he hadn't played very much, was to switch those two to the starting rotation at some point. And it's sort of like everybody they move three guys from the bullpen to the rotation, and they just, the rotation just took off, so much so that they could say to Shohei Ohtani, okay, look, we know you throw 100 miles an hour, but just swing the bat.
Rest that blister.
Exactly.
Stay off that blister.
Well, you know, yeah, well, what they did was make the Pacific League pay for, you know, feel his pain.
Yeah.
Because he just took a stick to the rest of the Pacific League, and it was while, you know, they caught up with the Hawks, basically, with Ohtani batting 6 days a week.
Yeah.
When he was the best hitter in the league for the time when he wasn't pitching. Until the very
right,
end,
so,
he kind of tailed off.
I mean, you know, when we were going through our picks and I was trying to pick predictions at the beginning of the season back in March, I really wanted to pick this happening. I just didn't have the guts to do it. And I wish I had, but, I really believed it till the end that the Hawks were going to win. And, you know, this thing isn't done. They've got to do it all over again in a playoff scenario, but they get to play the games at home, and we'll see how that works out. And we don't know that it's going to be the Hawks they play. So before we talk about the first stage of the Climax Series, let's go to Power Tracks. All right, so I talked to Patrick Newman. He's the NPB tracker. He does the power rankings for us. And obviously the power rankings are done in the Central League because all the games are done. So I just wanted him to go and talk about the teams that are in the playoffs and just give us an idea or a rundown of what those teams are looking like. So that's what he did. Let's take a listen. All right, the power is on. Joining us from the Bay Area is Patrick Newman. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
All right. Last time we did this, we started in the dark and it did into the morning time, and now it's already light.
Well, it's foggy.
But it's bright.
Sunlit fog right now.
All right, so I asked you to, for this last installment of the Power Tracks, to rank the teams from 1 to 6, the playoff teams. So what did you come up with?
Well, so I had kind of an A class and a B class of the playoff teams. And
you can aren't you
kind
the
of
comedian?
Yeah, well, no, this is how I do it. You know, it's a process of elimination.
Okay.
So Hiroshima, Nippon Ham and SoftBank in the top class, DeNA, Yomiuri, and Lotte in the B class. And as it turns out, I ranked them just like that. So for the A class, I couldn't have SoftBank as the top team just because of the injuries to Yanagita and Wada. And sort of they've struggled with the results. They've been playing okay, but they've kind of been out won by Nippon Ham. So I had them third. And then I picked Hiroshima first just because of the way they really cruised through the last month of the year, especially once they got to their magic number. So that leaves Nippon Ham second. In the B class, and so for the record, I think it's really close between those three teams. So it's going to be a great playoffs. And in the bottom, I had DeNA fourth just because they've played better against the Carp and the Giants this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think their best players are pretty good. Tsutsugo has had a great year. Imanaga has made a big difference. And this is the first Bay Stars team I remembered a long time with more than one good starter.
Mm.
I have Yomiuri fifth, mostly by process of elimination. So I have Lotte sixth, and Lotte, you know, it's a tough choice because they're all good teams. But Lotte, when I look at them last year, they were really kind of on an upswing where they were kind of marginal earlier in the year. And then through the second half, they really caught lightning in a bottle with their starters like Chen and Ri. And this year, they've had kind of an uninspiring last month of the season, and where they started out really well, and it was pretty close between them and Nippon Ham early in the year.
Yeah.
But they've been slumping, and they kind of punch above their weight offensively, and that's kind of run dry a little bit lately. So I think they have kind of a big disadvantage facing SoftBank in the first round. So I like SoftBank in that round.
That's interesting, because I without doing the numbers and research and all that stuff, and here's what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to have Fighters, Carp, Marines, Hawks, Giants, Bay Stars. And so the only one I got matched up with you was the Giants in fifth. And my reasoning for the Giants putting them down there is basically, if I were a Giants fan, I'd be concerned about their rotation going in. It hasn't really proved to be trustworthy. Even Sagano, he hasn't been shut down recently. So you figure there's some runs in there. And the Fighters have just been really good. They've just been really solid. And I had the Carp up in second. I figured you'd have them up there because exactly what you said. They finished. They got them to the magic number, and then they just whisked everyone aside and just raced to that pennant clincher, and they won that. And they kind of been sleeping a little bit after that, so that's why I didn't have them. And they were good that first week after they clinched, but they kind of went, not silent, but they kind of went dormant a little bit in terms of the intensity and everything. All right, so
they had a week where they lost, I think, four or five games in a row, but besides that, they've just been breezing through everyone. I originally had Nippon Ham first, but then I just kind of felt like a lot of things broke their way in the last month. Like, I forget who they were playing, but Ohtani was on third, and I think it was extra innings, and they scored on a wild pitch.
On a wild pitch, yeah.
And those great catches that Yo made against SoftBank to win those two games. And I remember there's another game where they were facing Norimoto, and he looked lights out for the first three innings, and then they cut one big inning off of him. And so I think they've just had a lot of things break their way. I mean, they're a really good team, and it was a really tough choice. The Carp, when I look at the lineup, I think the lineup's the best in Japan. The one thing is that they don't have the strikeout staff that Nippon Ham does, where it can get you strikeouts with Masui and Ohtani and Arihara, particularly earlier in the year. So that's a sort of a disadvantage that the Carp have. But it could almost go either way.
Okay. All right, well, in the first round, PLCS, who do you have between the Marines and the Hawks?
I can't pick against the Hawks this year. So, and at least in this round, I think what really clinched it for me was the series that just wrapped up between Lotte and SoftBank, where SoftBank won two out of three, and they won at least one of those games pretty convincingly. And Lotte has just seemed a little flat lately. So I like the Hawks.
All right, and in the first round, the Giants and the Bay Stars.
So I'm going DNA here. I'm sort of going with my heart a little bit, not my head.
I know that from a song somewhere.
Yeah, okay. I must be quoting someone.
Maybe it's a line, two lines from separate songs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and sort of more analytically, DNA has won the last six, I think, against Yomiuri. And Yomiuri, they've had some trouble with their rotation. I think their bullpen is better than DNA's. I think if Kajitani is performing well as he has been lately, I think that they're going to put up enough runs to beat him two out of three. So we'll see if I'm right about that one.
All right, and who do you see getting through to the Japan series?
I'm going with Nippon Ham and Hiroshima.
Oh man. I thought you were going to say the Hawks were going to, and you just said a second ago, you can't go against the Hawks, and now you're going to go against them. I don't understand you.
I quickly corrected and said in this round. So
I thought that meant, you know, in any round, but specifically this round.
No, in the first round, I can't pick against the Hawks. I can pick against them in the final stage, climax series. I think just the, having that one game advantage is a big deal. Obviously, I think the Nippon Ham has had everything kind of break their way. I think they're healthier. The lineup can score some runs. I think what it'll come down to is if they don't beat themselves with all the bunts and all that nonsense. But and then also if they I think they need to decide what to do with Ohtani. You don't want to risk injuring him. So is he going to hit or is he going to pitch? Is he going to pitch in two games or one? And sort of it puts them in an interesting conundrum because he's so good at both roles.
Right, so. And they haven't been in this position yet with him there. Anyway, yeah, we'll see how Ohtani does this time. I'd like to see him do both. I think in a series like that, I don't think you worry about trying to get him rest. It's time to win, so throw the rest out the window.
Yeah, but does he start game one and game five and then hit in the middle, or how exactly do they do that strategically? That'll be an interesting thing. I think they have enough. Yeah, they have enough bats in the lineup where they can get by without him. So especially with Yanagita being out for SoftBank. So
Good point. All right, we'll be watching your picks, but I'll be tweeting about them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the games.
All right, thanks a lot. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Patrick. Nice and what's the word? Precise? Concise?
Concise, yeah. That night I was out because, as you know, Deanna Rubin was visiting Japan on Friday night, and I gave Patrick an option, Thursday or Friday, and I think he picked Friday morning his time, which was Friday night our time, so I had to leave that get-together and zip home. Try to zip home. You can't zip home when you're not in control of the train.
that's a scary thought, John.
We wouldn't have stopped at other...
John is in control of the train. We will stop when he wants.
That's right. And then we're not stopping at any of those annoying stations between here and where I want to go. So, but he did wait, and wow. His son was next to him. It was pretty neat. His son's show was sitting next to him as he did the Power Track segment. Mm. So it was really fun. So what'd you take away from that?
Well, I thought it was, I don't have anything to take away other. I thought you guys were pretty much right on in terms of your assessments. I don't have any, I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of was surprised at the fact that, I tried to guess what he was going to say, and I only got the Giants in the fifth spot where he had them.
Right.
Having the Carp and the Fighters and the Hawks up there, that makes sense. I figured there would be two Pacific League teams and only one Central League team, and it would have to be the Carp.
Yeah.
And kind of surprised that he had the Bay Stars at fourth because we're going to talk about this shortly, but I'm looking at that matchup and it's really, really close. The differences are obvious, but I think the games still are going to be close. So that was just kind of interesting. I think the Carp, having not played all these competitive games, they're going to have to ease back into the fold. But that happens with every team that wins the pennant and has to sit around and wait. So let's talk about the Pacific League Climax Series first. The Marines are going to travel to Fukuoka for the quick three-game series. Mm-hmm. No wins off the field, so it's going to be full three games if necessary. Lotte, the Marines are going in as underdogs, I would say.
Mm.
But I really want to pick the Marines. They have Hideaki Wakui, who just finds a way to be tough on hitters. I wouldn't say he's great, but he makes great pitches when he has to, and he.
Okay, that's accurate. I don't know if that means he's tough on the hitters. He's tough. He can be in spots. Yeah.
Well, that's being tough. I mean.
He's tough on hitters in that a lot of hitters reach base on him despite his being tough on them.
Right, and then Ayumu Ishikawa, who is just as steady as anything. I mean, he pinpoints pitches. He's like Greg Maddux to me. You don't see a bunch of great stuff, high velocity, but he gets guys out consistently, and he's a really good pitcher. So, and the Hawks, I don't think they're going to have Yuki Yanagita. So
nope.
I think this is going to be a tough matchup for him.
Okay, just a little, I'll throw this out here. The Hawks versus the Marines in Yafu Oku Dome.
Hmm.
We're 6-4 this year.
Right.
Which is unusual because usually the Marines just play horribly there.
Except in the postseason.
Okay, yes. And
historically.
Again, the Hawks outscored the Marines in those games 67-54, so it was a pretty close matchup. Yeah, the Hawks are more built for the long run than the Marines are, but the Marines are really built for a three-game series because Ishikawa, Wakui, Jason Standridge can give them five really good innings. So that's a potential stumbling block, a potential stumbling block for the Hawks.
Yeah. So Shota Takeda has been a big game performer for the Hawks. Mm-hmm. Let's assume Rick Vandenhurk is going to be working a game. Mm-hmm. And after that, you know, there's old
Kodai Senga.
Senga has been really, really good for them. So I think they have depth at pitching. They have options. If I were a betting man, I'd probably go with SoftBank by a hair.
Yeah.
But I think, and right now the Marines seem like they're just unpredictable. And so I'm going to go with the Marines. And I know a lot of people are probably going to say, oh, no, Gibson picked our team. He's been wrong about the Pacific League all season long. But, you know, like I said, you got to sometimes try to pick these upsets. And I just say that the bad luck continues for the Hawks and that they fade away in the first round.
Interesting. Well, I would bet on the Marines as a slight underdog there. I think they're going to be a slighter underdog than a lot of people think. But yeah, that is interesting. I certainly agree with you. They have the ability to stay in there, and of course, the Hawks have. If these games turn into blowouts, you know the Marines don't have a chance. Because the Hawks could bury them.
Yeah,
those are the games the Hawks would win. But if they're all close, and it doesn't come down to having to score off Dennis Sarfate in the ninth inning, then yeah, then the Marines can pull it out.
Yeah, I do think the Hawks, if it becomes a bullpen game and it's really close and it's even, and they have Sarfate out there, I think they have the advantage. But I think if it's a bullpen game and the Marines have a lead, I think they can possibly hold it, maybe if it's two runs.
I'm with you.
All right, let's talk about the CLCS. It's a classic matchup, in my opinion. You've got two former teammates who are going in as the managers in their first year, first postseason experiences. Mm-hmm. The Yomiuri Giants finished second. The Yokohama DeNA BayStars third. They will play at Tokyo Dome. The Giants have struggled with the Dragons all year, and that continued on Tuesday and Wednesday. They had to play two extra inning games to manage to get through and lock down that second place spot. So Yokohama is going to play there at Tokyo Dome in the first round. And I just think this Alex Ramirez versus Yoshinobu Takahashi, I think it's classic matchup because you've got a team in the Giants that probably has more parts that Yoshinobu can use in different situations to leverage into favorable matchups. And I think Alex Ramirez doesn't have as many pieces, but I think he's got better pieces in certain places. Obviously, Yoshitomo Tsutsugo is an MVP candidate, and how the Giants decide to either pitch to him or pitch around him, and what happens afterwards with the other batters behind him, in front of him, I think that's going to be a really good, really fun thing to watch. The Giants have Tomoyuki Sugano, their ace pitcher, is arguably the best pitcher in the Central League.
Yep.
They're going to have Miles Michaelis and Kazuto Taguchi in some order.
Yep.
And what order those guys pitch in, I think that's a big thing. Because do you want the young guy pitching that third game, or do you want him pitching that second game? And do you win the first game and then send him out there, or do you lose the first game and then send the young guy out there? So I think they have a lot to there's a lot to be managed in this situation.
I think that what you just said is the key to the series. I think I like your assessment of these two teams. Scott Matheson said, interestingly, the Bay Stars have no pitching, and we're really lucky to play at Tokyo Dome because they just beat us like a drum in Yokohama.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants were 6-3 against the Bay Stars at Tokyo Dome. They were 4-9 against them in Yokohama. But although they were 6-3, they scored 40 runs and allowed 35. So
right.
It was not a convincing performance. And nor was their losses in Yokohama that convincing. The run differential was 75-69. Doesn't look like a 4-9 record there. So I'm really interested in this matchup, and I think these teams are very evenly matched, despite the fact that the Giants have the bigger names in the pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
When I said I like your appraisal, it'll come down to, you know, who can manage this, and I think this is exactly going to be the difference. I think Alex Ramirez is going to be better prepared to make the matchups.
Okay.
I don't think Takahashi's very good at that. I think he's going to make some crucial mistake in that respect. And if Alex makes a mistake, it'll be a mistake in the sense of, well, this guy was not as prepared as he should have been, or he was, you know, things did not work out. But I think he'll... the odds he'll take every, Alex Ramirez is going to take every percentage he can get, and that could be the difference, because these teams aren't that different. And I guess the other factor is that the Bay Stars players are unfamiliar with playing in late. They're unfamiliar with playing in late season games that have any meaning at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they're typically from August. You know, playing for, well, we still have an outside chance at fifth place.
Yeah, playing out the string, baby.
Outside
exactly. Chance at fifth place. I think this series comes down to the managers and the decisions they make. And again, you know, Shun Yamaguchi, the former closer turned starter, has a shoulder problem, and he isn't expected to pitch in the first stage.
Right.
So
that hurts.
That's going to hurt. They're probably going to send out Shoichi Ino, Shota Imanaga, and Kenta Ishida in some order. If Imanaga, a rookie, is pitching in the decider, I don't think that's a good situation for the Bay Stars. But I just think the difference is really razor thin to me, and I'm gonna say that while Rami Khan, as I like to call him, probably outmanages Yoshinobu in the series, I think the Giants have a slight edge in talent and depth. And just like you said, they're used to it. They're used to playing in big games and on a big stage, and where the Bay Stars aren't. And so I'm gonna pick them to move through to the second stage.
Yeah, I have to call it a toss up. And you know what happens if there's a tie is the Giants advance. And I'm gonna say there's a fairly decent chance there'll be one win and one tie, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah, I think that one of the keys to watch is Rami Khan. When he uses his pinch hitters, because they've had the most successful pinch hitting of any of the teams in Japan all season, and then how he handles his bullpen, who and when.
Wow.
And that's going to be a big factor, because we've seen him, we saw early in the season where he was either hesitant to take out a starter or left him in too long or took a guy out really quickly and went to the bullpen, and that didn't work out. So,
well, he has a good feel for that now. The other thing is, at least there is zero, you know, when you watch these two manage, you'll see one guy who is running his team and is prepared and has the coaches all on one page, and another guy who's standing there waiting for the coaches to tell him what his options are.
Yeah, he seems to be watching the game a little bit. Yoshinobu does, yeah. not managing
the game. He's watching
the,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's an advantage here, you know, that erases the fact that the Giants have guys, you know, have some guys with bigger track records. The fact that I think Ramirez might have as good a sense of what the Giants have in terms of talent and options and choices and possibilities than the Giants do.
Yep. All right.
So it's going to be interesting. I'm gonna pick the Bay Stars.
Okay.
Just out of that, for that one reason.
Okay. Excellent. So making a four-seam transition, I asked you earlier in the week what your biggest surprise of the season was for 2016, since at least one of the leagues has finished as we sit here on Sunday morning. And so what was it?
Okay, I had a tie, unfortunately. And I'll say it really quickly. One was that Shohei Ohtani was nearly as good a hitter as I thought he might be.
So, yeah, I thought that was a weird comment. And the only reason is because...
Because people don't play to their... you know, to their ceiling usually. And he did. And I was quite impressed with that.
Yeah. I just, you know, and I mentioned it on Twitter and, to one of the bloggers, I can't remember what it was, but, he made the statement that the Tigers didn't play to their potential. And I said, well, how do you know what their potential is? All right, one of the Tigers players.
Well, this was my impression. You know, I don't know what his potential, I don't know what Shohei Ohtani's potential was, but I, as I've been telling you for the last 4 years, well, the last 3 years, since he finished his first season as an 18-year-old, that he had all the markers of a Hall of Fame hitter.
Right.
I didn't say he had all of them, but he had indicators that only Hall of Fame hitters have in his record, mm-hmm. even when he wasn't hitting for average. So I saw that and I thought, you know, with some adjustments he made, I thought he would have been really good. I thought he was a guy, if he hit with as many at-bats he had, he might have hit 30 home runs. I thought he would have kept his on-base percentage up around 450 instead of dropping down to 416. So that was one. And the other one was obviously where I missed completely, which is that Koichi Ogata would be quite good at managing after what I saw a year ago.
Right.
So those two things I think were top.
Okay. And my biggest surprise in 2016, drum roll please, was the way the collision rule played out and the fact that the MPB officials decided to change it midstream. I think that was the biggest thing that I'd never seen anything like that, and I was very much against altering the rule.
You mean you've never seen anything like that in Japan?
In Japan, yes.
Happens all the time in MLB, yeah. But in Japan, no.
Well, all right. Well, anyway, I was very much against them altering the rule because some teams had lost games. There were impacts on the standings already because of the way the rules were. And I just didn't think it was right. But when they cleaned it up and they made the adjustment, we didn't see as much controversy, and it turned out to be the right move. And I was very pleased that they changed it. So I think that was a good change. It's just something I had never really seen in Japan before.
Yeah, we certainly had some silly things in the weeks after they did it, you know, where people were actually, and I have to think that the umpires were telling the teams after the games, you know, your guy was blocking the plate. What he was doing was illegal, and we're not going to stand for that. Because what we saw at the end of the season was nobody blocking the plate, catchers making really, really good tags, and also a lot of runs scoring that should have scored that would have not have scored last year because the catcher would have been preventing the guy easy access to the plate. So in the end, it worked out really good. Yeah. It was ugly. It was one ugly baby. But
it grew into a cute kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, making a two-seam transition. We saw a lot of retirement ceremonies, a lot of guys hanging it up this past week, and that happens at the end of every season, so that's nothing new. I think the most intriguing of the retirement ceremony games was the Thursday night game with Daisuke Miura of the Yokohama Bay Stars, and it was a very cool ceremony for a pretty cool guy. He didn't have a lot of that crying stuff. He did cry a little bit on the mound before he eventually left, but, you know, none of that leaking stuff during his speech. He was, you know, pretty much cool to the end until his wife and his daughter, his wife was in pieces, his daughter needed a handkerchief, and they came out with his son to the mound as he was, after he finished making his speech, and he was fighting back the tears. You could see it was a really, really, really tough battle for him to fight back the tears, and they welled up in his eyes, but he didn't let them leak out. And you know, I just thought it was a really fun celebratory evening. And the funniest thing he said, I think, at the beginning of his speech, he says, "Geez, I was a burden on the team to the very, very end."
Yeah. And so much of it was the other way around.
Yeah, he threw 6.1 innings, 119 pitches. He threw 12 hits he allowed. He struck out 8, but he had 3 walks and allowed 10 runs. He was the losing pitcher. You know, it was just a fun night despite him losing. And I thought it was going to be good because I needed the Swallows to win that game to actually finish in fourth, and they did. But they ended up losing, and the Tigers end up winning like 7 straight to close out the season, and so they messed up my really good predictions for the Central League.
That was extremely thoughtless of them. to win seven straight.
What are they thinking?
I know. Absolutely.
Don't they realize these predictions mean they're important?
Mean something to you?
Yes, that's right. Another ceremony that I thought was kind of touching and was another guy who didn't cry. I guess he did cry a little bit at his press conference, but Shinobu Fukuhara of the Tigers was good. A lot of guys left. We can't mention them all, but anything that you picked up during the week?
Nope. Not from retirement. No, I didn't watch any of them.
Didn't watch any of them. Okay, well, so moving right along, we have a couple of notes now. I did ask listeners last week to write in with some of the nicknames that they remember and that they were, we couldn't mention all of them on the show. I asked guys to write in some of their favorites. And Kansai Carl said Nobuyuki Kagawa of the Nankai Hawks. His nickname,
Dokaben.
Dokaben, yeah. Which means, he says, means giant lunchbox or giant
big
lunch.
Big lunchbox,
yeah.
Sure.
Brad Leslie of the Honkyu Braves was obviously nicknamed Animal.
And registered as Animal.
All right. And then Fumiya Hojo of the Hanshin Tigers, his nickname, Howard Johnson. I had not heard that.
Oh, well, I'm going to guess that was from Matt Haig or somebody.
Right, but that was Howard Johnson's nickname was Hojo. So yeah, it makes sense. And then a nickname for the Nippon Ham Fighters, he said, should be the Pugnacious Pork.
That works.
It works, huh?
That works really well.
Okay. And NPV Reddit said you left out one of my favorites, which was T-Rex, and that's Takahiro Okada of the Oryx Buffaloes. So yeah, we left that out because we didn't know about it.
We didn't know about it. Long story. So,
all right.
But anyway, I did mention that in a story once. Not that his nickname was T-Rex, but that his name was Teokata, and it might as well be T-Rex.
Yeah, might as well. Now, a couple of changes. As much as we expected Michihiro Guts Ogasawara to take over as the manager of the Dragons next year, the team came out and said, we're giving the nod to our current interim coach. We're going to strip that interim tag off of Shige Kazumori. And he'll take over, and he'll be promoted as the manager for next season. So I'm just wondering. As soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, maybe Ogasawara is not quite ready, and that Morty is going to be the placeholder, and they would just want him to sit in that spot for another year, or they like what they've seen out of him from the past month or so,
there's another
third to this half.
Indeed there is, which is either A, they don't want to offend Mori after he worked so hard at the end of the season and has worked so hard for so long for the team.
Right.
Or the other possibility is they're too lazy to actually interview anybody. I mean, this is a huge decision. And what you get in Japan now is every team... I mean, try to think now. I would like you to think of the last time an interim manager did not get the job for the next season. Well, I guess you could say that Yoshinori Sato didn't get the job in Rakuten, but he was replaced as interim manager during the season.
Right. Okay.
But I think the last one that I remember, and listeners, please correct me, was Leon Lee. When he replaced Hiromitsu Ishige, and he was not retained for the following season. It was more than a decade ago. So pretty much what they do is, you might not have had enough chances to prove you can't manage, so we're going to give you some more.
Although
that's not always true, because... You know, in Yakult, the last interim manager was Junji Ogawa took over in May, and he did a fantastic job, and he was told he was a placeholder for pitching coach Daisuke Araki, who has yet to manage, who was going to take over after him, but Ogawa did well for several years, and so, you know. that's the way these things work.
Sometimes, yeah.
Indeed.
All right, and so the Cebu Lions are also set to announce Hatsuhiko Tsuji as their new skipper, and yep. he's a former player with the Lions who, I guess, mm-hmm. spent some time playing with Nabe too.
Oh, yeah, they were double play partners about okay. 5 seasons in the the last stages of the Lions' golden era there from the 1980s to the 1990s.
Okay. So, yeah, interesting. Well, that's an interesting pick on that side again. Of course, we heard some rumors earlier about, what's his name?
Koji Akiyama.
Koji Akiyama, but I wasn't hearing a lot of reports about that moving forward in a forward direction. It just kind of stayed there and kind of was stale for a while, and then we started to get these reports recently about Tsuji, so that's going to be an interesting thing for them. And he's coming away. The Dragons are actually going to lose him as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of their tactical coaches, so that's interesting. Now,
yeah.
Before we leave you today, there are no questions today. We don't have any fielding questions. We always talk about our most memorable moments of the season, so we're going to do that next week.
Scared me there.
We're going to do that next week. Settle down.
You didn't put that in my homework assignment.
So let us know what was your most memorable moment of the season. For me, last year, I think it was Shogo Akiyama getting the record for hits in a season, and he had an infield hit early mm-hmm. on that got him the record, but then he came back with an extra base hit to make it really official. And so keep it short and sweet, and let us know on Twitter, at JBW Podcast, or on the Facebook page. Email is always accepted, YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. And everyone, enjoy your postseason.
Okay, thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.